Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi Nick, are you bored of drinking big fat shots of Director's Bitter and Ladyboy Chasers at home?
Tom, I ruddy bloody am. I'm hopping mad and just want some exciting craft beers to enjoy when I'm watching my Bond videos. That's not too much to ask, is it?
Well, have I got some good news for you. The fantastic chaps at Beer 52 have given us a special offer they'd like us to share with our listeners.
Can I just shock you? I like special offers. Do tell me more.
All you need to do is go to beer52.com/monkeytennis, cover the postage cost of £5.95, and you'll be sent a box of 8 cracking craft beers, plus a magazine, and 2 beer-appropriate snacks.
Wow, that is a real breath of fresh air. So you're telling me to get a free case of 8 unique craft beers from Beer 52, I just need to go to beer52.com/monkeytennis and cover the postage costs of £5.95?
Yep, it's literally that simple. It really is lovely stuff.
Oh, sometimes you want to say, sod all this wine, just give me 8 craft beers.
And I've really got to say this, Nick. Beer 52 is the world's largest beer club.
Mmm.
Yep, each month members are sent a case with a different theme. Past themes have included Belgium, Korea, California, New Zealand and many more.
But what if I don't like dark beers?
Ah, they've got that covered too. If you don't like dark beer, you can choose a light beer option. And you can pause or cancel at any time. Simply go to beer52.com/monkeytennis and just pay £5.95 postage to get all this now.
Crash, bang, wallop, what an offer. 8 free beers, a magazine and 2 snacks for less than £6 postage. Mine's not a pint, mine's a box of 8 craft beers. I'll drink to that.
Hello and a hearty welcome to this series of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks and hopefully by now you'll realise this series is all about speaking to notable fans of Partridge or FOPs. This week's guest is no exception. It's the comedian John Robbins, who you might know from Russell Howard's Good News, Live at the Apollo, Mock the Week, Live from the BBC, The John Richardson Show. He won a Chortle Award. He also co-won the Edinburgh Comedy Award with Hannah Gadsby for his show, The Darkness of Robbins in 2017. And of
course, he's known for his show and now podcast with Ellis James as well. Thankfully for us, he's also a huge fan of Partridge. So we sent Tom Dark and Nick Holder along to have a chat with him. And that's coming up any second now. Just before we get to the meat of today's episode, if you'd like to get in touch with us at all, please feel free to do so. You can email us thepartridgepod@gmail.com, facebook.com/thepartridgepod. We're on Twitter @thepartridgepod, on Instagram @monkeytennispod. You can leave a voice note on the Monkey Tennis hotline 07923 600 017, and you might hear that in a future episode. Or if you're just enjoying what you're hearing and you'd like to shout us the price of a cup of coffee, or maybe five coffees to give us all one, ko-fi.com/monkeytennis is the place that you can do that. Anyway, on with the episode. I hate it when there's a long rambling intro when really you just want to get into the meat of the interview. So may I humbly introduce Nick Holder and Tom Dark of Monkey Tennis fame talking to John Robbins of John Robbins fame.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Aha! Yep, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey tennis?
Little pierce my foot on a spike.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
No.
Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Edmonds is a total wazzard of a guy.
Yes, 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 and yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Right, listeners, it's time to welcome another esteemed guest to Monkey Tennis. Not only a fan of Partridge, but a fan of Queen, a fan of golf, a fan of pints, and a fan of diligent tax record keeping. Today, we are joined by an award-winning comedian, award-winning radio broadcaster, and the host of many podcasts that are far more successful than ours. This week, we're chatting to fellow fan of Partridge, John Robbins. John joins us now via the medium of Zoom to talk about Alan appreciation through the years, and perhaps if we can find the time, we'll also get to celebrate a mutual appreciation of neck oil, curries, and pubs too. In fact, I'm already convinced he's our best friend. John, welcome, and a huge thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. It's a delight to be here.
So look, before we get going, I just thought I should point out that you're definitely in good company here. I really enjoyed on your website that you've highlighted a text you had into your Five Live show, two giggling, self-absorbed twerps spouting incomprehensible garbage. I thought you might like to appreciate we've had kind of a similar iTunes reviews over the years, including a bunch of Oxbridge rejects cackling at their own jokes, Grade 1 student radio, and just people saying words from Alan Partridge episodes and backslapping. So you've definitely made the right choice in joining us today.
So you haven't had any dosses or dwads?
Well, I mean, we always called ourselves dosses and dwads in the info from day one. Cool, so we've got covered. Shall we jump straight into it?
Yeah. Curious to hear what your kind of first encounters with Alan were. You know, what's your kind of earliest memory of when you first saw Mr. Partridge?
Well, I had a music teacher at school who was a real breath of fresh air, and he's called Mr. Bradshaw, and I was a quite precocious sort of 11 or 12 year old, really into Queen, and he was also into Queen, and I don't think he'd stumbled across many young kids into Queen, so we sort of bonded over that. And I think because, I don't know why, but he for some reason thought I would like On the Hour. So he made me a cassette recording of On the Hour. This would have been not long after it first came out, maybe a year after, a year and a half after. And that was probably comedically for me one of the most important things that ever happened. And I just devoured this cassette recording of On the Hour. And then he mentioned that the Alan Partridge character had his own radio show called Knowing Me, Knowing You, which is kind of easy to forget. That came before the day to day. And I badgered my mum, and I think maybe for a birthday or Christmas, I got the BBC cassette of Knowing Me, Knowing You. And that was basically my progression from story tapes that kids listened to. So sort of Roald Dahl and what else did I have? Sort of Famous Five, those sorts of things that you just listen to on a loop. I just started listening to Knowing Me, Knowing You on a loop. To the extent which, as with an awful lot of Partridge now, I could almost sort of play it in my mind. And then
don't need the tape anymore. It's all there.
Just there. And then when the day-to-day came out, that was the first Alan project I was sort of consuming in real time. And I remember those little taster video, those sort of almost little trails for the day-to-day, very short sort of 1 or 2 minute bits. And I just couldn't quite believe how funny it was. And I remember watching, I'm not sure if it was the first episode, but it became appointment TV and we'd only just got a video recorder. So this would be, it was 94, was it? 93, 94?
The day-to-day was, yeah, the day-to-day and was 94, yeah.
Yeah, and Know Me, Knowing You is 93. And I taped them all and I taped all the little teasers. And I remember when Chris Morris said the Bank of England has lost the pound, it was a new experience of laughter that I'd not really had before. And I remember an interview with Steve Coogan when he said he read the scripts for the day to day and he just wept with laughter because it was so unlike anything else. But it was pretty much from on the hour I was hooked. But it was listening to Knowing Me, Knowing You on a loop and then consuming the day-to-day live. And I think probably quite younger than maybe most viewers of the day-to-day, I would have been sort of 12, 13.
I was going to say, I think probably all three of us, I think we're all the same age broadly. And I feel like I definitely remember.
You're going to say it was nearly 50 now.
Thankfully, none of us are nearly that old. But yeah, I feel like that probably was exactly the same thing, for me at least as well, I think. Being vaguely aware of this character through discovering the day-to-day. And I definitely do remember, as you say, kind of experiencing that as it happened week by week. But yeah, I think you were kind of in there from on the hour. So it's kind of you have literally been an Alan fan across everything from almost day one, which is quite impressive. Yeah.
Well, I didn't listen to On the Hour on the radio, but yeah. I got this tape from the teacher probably 6 months, a year after it came out. And then when Knowing Me, Knowing You went to TV, that was my first sort of live Alan solo project.
Yeah.
And I remember videoing them and just, I learnt all of the lines and I learnt the ABBA medley and all the moves. And I would sort of tick off which characters had made it across from the radio show. And then a friend and I at school, a kid called Graham Wise, we set up Club Alan Partridge in school with our tie and blazer Brilliant. Badge set. And we drew the Alan Partridge blazer badge. And, I mean, we weren't sort of in any particularly popular set at school. So we weren't asked to play football or anything, but we would go around with each other quoting Partridge and doing the ABBA medley and saying things like, where'd you keep your paper clips? Just around. Put them on there.
Can you was there any more were there any more requirements for the club, or was it just having your knowing the quotes and having your blazer badge set?
Just me and Graham drawing our blazer badges. We would have... When did Knowing Me, Knowing You, the TV show come out? Was that 95?
I think that was 94 as well. If what I've typed up is correct, I think the day-to-day was first in 94 and that came towards the end of 94.
Yeah. So, I mean, if what's wrong, a golden age of output? From On the Hour through Knowing Me, Knowing You on the radio to the day-to-day, to Knowing Me, Knowing You on TV. Crikey, what a time to be alive. I was also, I mean, the only other thing I was really watching comedy-wise at that time, apart from like that sort of hangover from the 80s of sort of Russ Abbott and, was it Phil Cool?
And yes.
Those sorts of, there were still a few sort of comedy variety shows, but to have the day-to-day amongst all that. But the only other thing I was really watching was Bottom and sort of those two very different influences, Bottom and Partridge, sort of really shaped the way I speak to this day. And then going into radio, it's just impossible with 27 years of Alan, it's impossible to present a radio show and not for to sort of become him. So when we started at Radio X, as XFM, me and Ellis, obviously you're introducing tracks. So you can't come off the back of a track without going, that was, you just can't. And there are so many, it's sort of weird realizing how well observed a lot of the radio stuff is after the point when you come into a radio studio and like on Five Live Now, when a caller stops early and you've got 20 seconds to fill before the news. I kind of don't quite know how Steve Coogan and the writers knew all this stuff about radio, because it's exactly what you hear people doing on Five Live when they've lost a caller and they're sort of filling time for 40 seconds before the news bed kicks in, or they hit the wrong jingle, or something. You can hear something falling over in the studio. I'm becoming more like Alan as I get older through the radio work.
I do enjoy that. It kind of, you do find Partridge kind of gets weaved into your parlance, and sometimes you do it intentionally, sometimes you do it unintentionally. Sometimes people in the room won't have clocked that you're doing it, and sometimes someone in the room will be like, "Oh, that was so Partridge, wasn't it?" And they've kind of caught you doing it. It's great to hear, obviously, that Steve is kind of one of your early influences, and obviously you've touched on Bossum. It'd be great to hear about your kind of the people in comedy who have inspired you at a younger age to kind of get involved in the world of comedy. Who would you cite as those kind of touch points?
Well, I mean, really, I wasn't in any way a sort of stand-up aficionado before I started doing stand-up. Stand-up was a sort of act of desperation for me, because me and my friend Robin, who I lived with and who I present the Moon Underwater podcast with, we were just sort of writing sketch ideas in a notebook for a year or so. And it was more that at university I was the bar rep. So I was in charge of the bar, and I would put on events that had no need for a host, but I would install myself as the sort of MC of the karaoke. Like, karaoke doesn't need an MC, but I would sort of talk in between the people and commentate on the songs that they'd done. So after uni, I was very depressed, working in a bookshop, drinking far too much, and I sort of realized my life was not going quite as planned. So I stopped drinking and went to an open mic night. And I think I'd maybe been a bit sneery about stand-up, but TV comedy writing is such a closed shop, really, unless you have contacts, with which I had none. Whereas stand-up was it was just so attainable. You could just turn up and go on that night. And, you know, you think the sort of hoops you'd have to jump through to get someone to read a script or even, you know, give you some advice. You know, I wouldn't even know the people to ask. So to find that you could just go to a pub and say to someone, "I'd like to try 10 minutes. And they go, "Okay." Like, "Oh, what, really?" And then you do it, and then you've done it. And then you can say you are it. You can say, "Oh, I do comedy now." And I just got completely obsessed with stand-up. But I didn't have any stand-up icons because I hadn't watched any stand-up. I hadn't really consumed it. So, comedy-wise, it really would be Bottom, Alan, The Day-to-Day, Brass Eye, Blue Jam. I guess later on, Armstrong and Miller, their first sketch show.
Oh, their first sketch show on Channel 4. That was brilliant.
Really underrated, that. The Armando Iannucci shows and Reeves and Mortimer. Mm. I was a huge Reeves and Mortimer fan at school, and me and a friend, George, sort of the only interaction we had with the cool girls was making them laugh doing last night's Reeves and Mortimer. And I would learn it. I remember once getting up early to learn the song from the previous night's Reeves and Mortimer that I'd recorded, from The Smell of Reeves and Mortimer, and then later on Bang Bang, It's Reeves and Mortimer, which I think is really underrated. So good. And Catterick, and then at uni sort of Human Remains and Woody Allen, and Woody Allen's stand-up as well. So all of that is pre me starting stand-up. and then sort of stand up. Then I was watching stand up, which was kind of incredible. And also rubbish. It's important to remember that an awful lot of the stand-up I was watching, I was thinking, this is rubbish. This person is rubbish. And I disagree with what they're saying, and I find it really unpleasant. And then you'd see someone who's like, oh my God, how can someone be that funny for half an hour? So you sort of gauge that because anyone can do it, it doesn't necessarily mean they're good if you go and see a stand-up. So that was quite interesting to suddenly think, oh, I might be able to be quite good at this because quite a lot of the people who are doing it aren't very good. And some of them are amazing. So maybe I might fit in somewhere between those two sort of stalls.
Well, you've touched on kind of like the early Alan Partridge. I must admit, I'm very envious of someone kind of coming to it chronologically, given we're of similar age. I came to Alan much, much later. What do you kind of cite? Because we discuss this loads on the podcast, that there's so much Alan now across so many different formats. But what are the kind of moments or characters or lines that really stand out for you and stand the test of time and, some of your favourite bits throughout the years?
Well, me and my best friend can have an entire conversation about our lives in Alan Partridge quotes. And to very, very minuscule details. So if one of us calls the other, we will either answer the phone going, hello, Alan, which is Roger Moore on Knowing Me, Knowing Yule, when he finally makes contact with Roger.
Yeah.
Or classic. We will answer the phone by going, can either of you get that?
That, oh God, I know it, but I can't.
Can we have one more?
This way you're going to be on knowledge. I definitely recognise the noise, but I can't.
So that's when Kerry calls in to ask a question to Tony Hayes
on the radio show.
Her question is, why aren't there more youth programmes? What?
That's it.
Why aren't there more youth programmes? But the person who puts her call through misses the H off hello, so you just get So it's one of those two when we answer the phone.
I really think you should probably be hosting this podcast.
Yeah,
Joe.
I think that's exceptional knowledge.
That's a bit of knowledge where you're trumping us significantly.
I think I really should. What's the money like?
I mean, we can discuss that off air, but it's not great. Let's be honest.
It's amazing that people like you do your job for such rubbish money.
He's got us again. Yeah.
I mean, for me, the absolute high points of Alan, I think, are the second series of I'm Alan Partridge. I prefer that to the first, which is not a common opinion.
I mean, you're wrong, but fine, carry on.
it's fine to disagree.
I know some people think that, but I don't. But I think the best thing Alan has ever done is the first series of Mid Morning Matters.
Yeah. Can I shake your hand, etc. That is.
I just think that is wall to wall. It's so perfect. It is. It suits Alan. The way it's filmed suits him so well. It's the joy of those little moments on I'm Alan Partridge where you get to be in the radio studio.
Yes.
But that sort of webcam voyeurs is so great for him. And I just think the whole arc, the final episode of that with Zoe, who is a breath of fresh air, that is the best thing Alan Partridge has ever done, that final episode of Mid Morning Matters. I just think it's so, so good.
Yeah.
I think that's a very purist fan's view, isn't it? I think a lot of people listening to this would probably agree. And I think, like you say, because it's kind of an extrapolation of, I think in I'm Alan Partridge, you see him in the radio studio doing all those kind of comedy back announcing of songs like you talked about. And I think, diehard fans, I think, always wanted to see more of that, and Mid Morning Matters finally delivered. Yeah. And I think a lot of what we talked about when we covered it on the podcast, a lot of the nuance and the subtlety to the humour within that show is really what made it so good, I think.
Yeah, we've spoken a lot about it. And actually, I think when it first came out, we didn't really appreciate it. because it's quite high concept, and it's a bit strange when you see it at first. And there was the whole Foster's sponsorship, and it was on YouTube, and it was a strange beast, I think, when it came out. But I think it's aged exceptionally well, and it grows with repeat viewings because there's so much to appreciate and so much to uncover. And I think, yeah, we'd agree Mid Morning Matters is definitely up there in some of the best of Alan's output. Does Alan kind of, like, you know, has he kind of touched your life in kind of the real world? I mean, we've ourselves been on Alan's stag do's. We've been, you know, we've had ladyboys in real life. What has Alan ever kind of...
Ladyboy chasers, not ladyboys. There's a difference.
Oh, sorry. Did I not make that clear?
Yeah, ladyboy chasers.
I should make that clear. we'll have to fix that in the edit. Has he ever kind of touched you in the real world? Probably another one to fix in the edit there, but hopefully you know the point I'm making.
Well, I've met Steve Coogan twice, and... the first time was very sort of very brief meeting backstage at Rahulastapur, Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. And I was so conscious of getting it wrong, and I could tell he was in quite a sort of shy mood, I think. But I asked him whether Tony Blackburn's Poptastic was a reference point for Alan, and he said it was. Because there are moments in Tony Blackburn's Poptastic which are beyond Partridge, and there are certain lines that have a slight familiarity to them. So that was my one little fan question, because I'd just finished reading excerpts from Poptastic on the Radio X show. Well, it was XFM back then, maybe. And then I wrote my own autobiography in the style of Poptastic, called A Robin's Amongst the Pigeons. But, and then I met him, the year after I won the Edinburgh Award, I was asked to go back up and give out next year's award, because Hannah Gadsby was by then too successful to fit it into her schedule. I was at a loose end. And Steve was sort of co-presenting it with me. And that was so nice. We had, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes in the sort of green room getting ready, and we had a really good chat, and I was able to ask him a few things about Alan. And so, for example, Mid Morning Matters, I asked him about that and said I thought that was fantastic, and he was sort of saying what was great was that they were able to have real freedom, because they knew that actually not a lot of people were going to watch it live. Because, you know, it was on Sky. And it was on YouTube for a bit. I think maybe, like, personally as an Alan fan, one sort of minor criticism, not of the first Mid Morning Matters, is I think because not many people saw it, they reused a few jokes from it in the second series and in this time.
Yes.
And only because I've got sort of encyclopedic knowledge, you notice those little... sort of returns to the riff. But then, you know, they did the same on Knowing Me, Knowing You when it transferred to TV. So it's not a huge criticism, but let's put it like this. I don't think you can play King and Car twice. But I think that was the thinking, was that, well, no one's really seen it. So if, I don't know, 5 million people watch this time, and I don't know how many people watched Mid Morning Matters on Sky or on YouTube.
Not 5 million people, yeah.
No, say it's 200,000 or whatever, or 500,000. You have to take into account that 4.5 million people haven't heard the joke about whether Alan's had a spray tan or not.
Yeah.
So it's fair game.
No, we've definitely talked about
that. I didn't say
like
that to Steve, by the way.
Should have done.
I just said, it's a pleasure to meet you. Have you seen anything you liked at the festival? And I really enjoyed Mid Morning Matters. I did also... send in, my dream is to write for Alan in some respect. I did actually send Baby Cow an unsolicited script, a chapter of a book and a scene from Mid Morning Matters. And even though nothing will ever happen, I'm so glad I did, because I'd been thinking about this Alan scene in my head for so long. It was driving me nuts. And I thought, come on, just write it down and send it. So I did. And I I'm usually someone who's quite sort of beset by shame about stuff like that. But as soon as I'd sent it, it was like, oh, great, you've done it. You were brave enough to do it and send it, and it's done and it's good. And they will never use it because they've really got all the bases covered with the Gibbons brothers, who are fantastic. But you've done it, and I haven't thought about it since.
But John, you're firm friends with Tim Key, so surely he can get you within the Baby Cow inner sanctum by this point.
I didn't actually go through Key.
Always go through Key. That's what I've heard.
No, I went for a drink with Key last week. He's so great to chat to about it. Just, he said that the recording is so fun. And I think he also has, you know, not to speak to his experience, but he has a sense of, you know, this, I'm part of Partridge. This is insane. And he's brilliant. He's such a good face actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it must be that strange experience of being a bit of a fanboy on set, and meeting your heroes must be an incredible experience. But I could imagine the nerves probably having to act around Coogan must also be incredibly high. I know that if I was doing something like that, I'd be absolutely breaking it.
But I think that really helps with Sidekick Simon, because he is tentative around Alan, and he is sort of never quite sure whether he should make the joke, and he's often getting sort of shut down. So I think you could draw on those nerves. You could almost sort of play it pretty straight.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter whether it's Tim or Steve or Simon and Alan.
Did you when Tim was doing things like This Time and Mid Morning Matters, did you ever, you know, was he giving you intel on kind of like developments, script, stuff like that, or was he quite shtum about it all?
No, I mean, I would never.
Or would you not ask, because it's kind of like ask weird mates and
like
not
that.
Do the work thing, yeah.
Because I think you're nervous enough about a project when you're doing it, but B, I mean, these things are genuine secrets these days. Yeah. So he might have said, you know, we're working on something, but he would never say more than that, because the new Alan is, I mean, it's not quite Star Wars level, but he will have, I'm presumably, signed stuff to say, I won't talk about this because it needs to be a surprise. And I have to say, he held up to questioning very, very well.
they don't need to worry, it's fine.
Oh, not at all.
One other thing we wanted to touch on, and actually it's one of the reasons why we thought, John must be perfect for something like this on our show, is you interviewed the actor that played Chris Feather. How did it come about and what was that like?
Constantine, his name is. So we have a feature on our radio show called Unsung Hero, where we sort of find people behind the scenes of big stuff or cool stuff or stuff you use every day. So we interviewed the guy who invented parking sensors, both front and rear. It's so mad. Like, I can find an Alan Partridge line for any situation. So what does both front and rear come from? Because that's an Alan line. And I don't even know where that's from.
Oh, God. I don't know.
It may even be parking sensors.
This is the thing. We've done, 120-plus episodes of this. And it's like, I think you sometimes fill your head up with the quotes so much you have to push other quotes out. And I think sometimes you just go, oh, I've forgotten everything that was said in that until I go back and look at my notes and remember what I thought the best lines were and stuff. It's actually quite hard to keep it all in, I think.
Well, one thing me and Ellis say more than anything else is massive it is. Massive it is. And I could not for the life of me think, where the hell this, we keep saying massive it is. And I would get into a loop in my house just saying out loud, because I live alone, I would just keep saying massive it is, massive it is. I was thinking, where the hell is that quote from? And I texted Robin, my friend. I says, when does Alan say massive it is? And it's when he goes to Bono's house.
Yeah.
And he turns up and says, well, this is it. This is where the idiot lives. And he goes into the bedroom and says, yeah, that's where he sits in the morning with a copy of the Daily Express and the biggest bowl of Alpen you've ever seen. Massive it is. I suddenly like, oh, right, that's where that thing I've probably said 100 times in the last month came from. And it's such a small little... What I love about that is when Alan's eyes almost believe it, because he's invented this lie that Bono lives in this big house. He's got the biggest collection of hatchbacks. And then when he says, he's lying, he says he sits there with a copy of the Daily Express, the biggest bowl of alpum you've ever seen. And then he gets this faraway look in his eyes and goes, massive it is. So he's sort of bought into his own fantasy. Anyway, that wasn't the question. What was the question?
Chris Feather.
Hey, Chris Feather. Yeah.
Chris Feather, he likes me. Yeah, so our producer said, do you want to talk to the guy who plays Chris Feather in Alan Partridge? And I was like, yes, 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 and yes. That's from the first King and Car. I think this is the best call I've ever had.
Yeah. Please do call again, John.
Yeah. Do you like folk music? No, I hate it. I think that the scene in Bono's house is one of the best Partridge scenes. I love that he calls him an idiot. This is where the idiot lives. You got my text then, Lynn? Oh, I love God. That he sent Lynn a text saying, can you find someone who looks like Bono?
Yeah, that bit is brilliant. That guy's really good.
That's where it's so good, isn't it? Because I think actually there's a surface level where what's going on is ridiculous and silly and that's why it's funny. But then when you actually stop and think about the interaction between the characters that you aren't seeing on screen, like Alan texting Lynn, stuff like that, I think that adds the extra layer of humour, doesn't it? Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, can I just get another can of cider? Is that all
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Lynn. Yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
One thing I really think is very canny about Alan is that he's not a drinker. And I think that's really useful comedically, because if it were he a drinker, it would be very hard to imagine a lot of his life without him just getting hammered all the time. Because, you know, if I lived alone in a travel tavern, I would be hammered every night, especially with a bar downstairs. So I think that's quite a clever touch, that drink doesn't really agree with Alan, apart from a big fat shot of directors. But there's the bit in, I think it's I, Partridge, where he talks about not drinking the day because it makes him feel nauseous. And he sort of has half a glass of wine when he has a confrontation with Carol. And then the scene with the guys from the Hamilton's Water Breaks video.
Yeah.
It's a really useful tool that he's not a drinker.
Yeah, no,
but
yeah.
Sorry, what was I going to say before I besided myself? Is that for me, like, the key phrase with Alan is dead air is a crime, because he speaks off air as if he has to fill every silence, which is where you get these wonderful extra bits of information that are totally superfluous, that he then finds digging himself into sort of a syntactical hole, because he can't not say the extra thing, whether that's banal or offensive or irrelevant. he sort of has to add an extra clause to every sentence. And that's been a huge influence on the way I write stand-up, is going beyond the first joke and finding a subsequent joke that it's almost like you're not quite saying it. It's being sort of pulled out of you because you have to give an extra slant. And then you can often do it sort of twice. So you get two bites at the cherry. And my last few shows, there's an awful lot of that. And you know, people have picked up in reviews that I'm quite Partridge. But it's that tactic of saying the thing, then you make the joke, and then you go one step, two step further than you probably need to, and sort of often correcting yourself.
Well, I think that's what feels very true to the character. I think you're totally right, because it's often, he's either always got to have the last word in some way, or he's such a stickler for accuracy, there's always going to be something at the end of a conversation where he's got to correct it and got to make sure whatever he said he believes is correct in some kind of way. Yeah, which I think is kind of a trait you see throughout kind of every iteration of the character. And I wonder as well, it's interesting, like if you're saying how that you've applied that to your own stand-up shows, I wonder how many other comics actually have quite acute kind of inspiration from sitcom for their writing as opposed to kind of other stand-ups. I don't really know whether that's kind of a common trait or not, but then like you say, you know, people, if reviews kind of saying you're a bit kind of Alan-esque, I'd also say, well, isn't there a bit of Alan in all of us in a way? You know, it's kind of, I think particularly if you are a lifelong fan, you can't help but pick up on these kind of like idiosyncrasies of the character probably.
I think probably in stand-up and in sketch comedy, I see more Brent.
I see
an awful lot of Brent, because Brent gives you a get-out clause if something doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because Brent is constantly kind of sort of looking to camera when they should be laughing. So I see quite a few stand-ups and sort of like social media videos that people do, which are really funny, but it's like that's pure Brent. And I think probably less Partridge, weirdly. But I wonder if sort of Brent is the generation after Partridge. So if Partridge is sort of 93 to 95, Brent is 2000, sort of 2003. So the big stand-up boom happened around 2005, when suddenly the amount of stand-ups, it just exploded. And Brent would have been so in everyone's minds then, in a way that was Alan probably on hiatus 2005?
You're right.
The first series of I'm Alan Partridge is depressingly early, isn't it? Isn't that like 97?
97 was series one. Series two was 2002. So actually, you had the interesting point, I think. And I think we talked about this probably on the podcast years ago. I think I'm Alan Partridge series two ended, and then it was literally something random, like the next week The Office started. There's some really nice synchronicity, like kind of almost a passing of the comedic baton from one character to another in a way.
Well, I remember an episode of it was a radio comedy called something like the 50p challenge or the 99p challenge. Oh, the 99p challenge.
Yes. Armando used to be on that a lot.
Yeah. And I remember listening to it in 2002, and he was doing all, he was sort of riffing about how every award possible was going to The Office. So he was like, oh, and then the next award for best waste paper basket goes to The Office. And there was obviously a slight feeling that The Office had overshadowed Alan in the sort of public consciousness. But Alan has stood the test of time.
Yeah, I wonder.
Where's Ricky Gervais now?
Yeah.
Who?
No one's heard of him for years. So, in the wilderness.
I think,
Well, would you say, has the quality of Steve Coogan's output maintained itself better than the quality of Ricky Gervais's output?
On the basis that I don't think Ricky Gervais listens to this podcast or would ever be on this podcast, I'm going to agree with you, John.
Yeah.
But Ricky, if you are listening, do come on. But yeah, you know what? That's a really interesting point, because you basically got kind of, I'm Alan Partridge Series 2 finished 2002, and then you had, I don't think the character really came back at all till you had the Steve Coogan tour in 2009, which was Alan Partridge and other less successful characters.
Yeah.
But then there wasn't a proper Partridge vehicle again until Mid-Morning Matters Series 1, which I think was 2011. And I wonder if part of that extended hiatus was almost a bit of a Brent effect. It's a bit like having to create a bit of distance between an Alan and a Brent, perhaps. Never really thought about
also,
that.
Also, sort of 91, 92 to 2002, you'd had a lot of Alan.
Yeah.
But it's just that in those preceding years when Steve Coogan was doing a lot more acting, there was a lack of Alan. I think we can all agree. And since then, we've almost been spoilt with Alan content.
Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of hilarious. I think when we started doing this podcast, we were like, okay, well, we'll do I'm Alan Partridge Series 1. If people listen to it, we might do Series 2. And then we're like, okay, fuck it. Let's do Alpha Papa. Let's do and you know, kind of thinking, well, we're going to get to a point where we're going to run out. Obviously, we had, you know, no idea that so many new Alan vehicles would happen in the time we started doing a podcast like this. So, I mean, it's kept us bloody busy the last couple of years, that's for sure.
And what did you think of Alpha Pepper in this time?
I mean, I personally thought this time was very strong. I think in the same way that Mid-Morning Matters was that kind of high concept, original idea, I think Mid-Morning Matters, they took something that could have been very obvious and it would have worked, but it wouldn't have particularly trod new ground. And actually, I think what they did with this time was do just that, take something that on the face of it appears very kind of simplistic and actually put a unique spin on it, which I think is one of the Gibbons' real strengths. For me, I think Alpha Papa at the time I really enjoyed, but unlike Mid-Morning Matters, which has you know, improved over time, Alpha Papa is not something I go back to. I think it's that thing that comedy vehicles that make the leap into film often struggle with. You know, I love The Inbetweeners, but how often do I watch The Inbetweeners film? Not very much. I think Alpha Papa has some real moments, but it doesn't. It's not something that I regularly return to personally.
Yeah, I think I would say Alpha Papa is probably one of my least favourite pieces of Alan. Or the APU, actually, I don't think we've explained. So we developed the shorthand, the Alan Partridge Universe, the APU. So anything that
develop covers the shorthand any piece of Alan. As if it took us.
Surely you've got to go the Partriverse.
I think originally we did use Partriverse, but I think APU just felt a bit more snappy in the end. But
sounds like a motor oil.
Yeah, exactly. Get that on the back of a jacket. I don't think Alpha Papa is that great, but I think it's the format of just Alan on film, just even the way, like the quality of the, like the film it's shot on, it just didn't feel the same for me.
I know what you mean. I thought it was a really brave choice to keep it very domestic.
Yeah.
And I think probably the only bits of Alpha Papa I wasn't as keen on was when it went more filmic. So the car chases, I thought I could have done with one less car chase. And what I would have loved is to have seen a bit of Alan post siege when he'd have got a bit of celebrity.
Mm.
So I really like the idea that, you know, Alan gets this boost from his little moment in his sort of 5 minutes in the press. And he's suddenly on Celebrity Big Brother or he's on like Good Morning Britain. But I wonder if that's probably too big a story to just begin at the end. But I would have liked a bit of post-Siege Alan as opposed to, probably the second car chase. But those bits in the studio and, I mean, the bit in his shed when Lynn walks in, you can see the reflection of the boobs
and the glasses.
It's so good.
But I mean, that's the weird thing. It's a bit conflicting, really, digging into it, because I do think script-wise there are some brilliant gags in it, but I just think as a vehicle, it just didn't inherently feel like it suited the character. I don't think.
Well, I think it's Alan, like any sitcom character, it's a cliche, but he's always trapped, whether it's in a travel tavern or a
static home,
or a radio studio, or a petrol station. So the bits that work on film are the bits where he's trapped in the radio studio, he's in his shed, and when you take it out, it may be, but you have to. I mean, you're making a film that people are going to watch on a big screen in cinemas.
Yeah, and I think, to be fair, it could have been a disaster and it wasn't. I just think the bar is so high for a lot of the other Alan stuff we love. It's kind of comparatively, it's one of my least favourite things, but I think in terms of it's a British sitcom movie spin-off, it's probably one of the best examples there is.
So, it's better than Hotel Paradiso.
Yeah, that's not exactly great, is it? Yeah. Even Simon Pegg can't save that.
I mean, it's not completely awful, but it's again, it doesn't feel, they don't feel trapped enough. They've got too many rooms, and I'm used to seeing Bottom happen in one, maybe two rooms.
Yeah. Hotel Paradiso also had that weird thing where, I don't know if it was like a licensing issue, but you remember they don't call themselves by the same names. So I don't know if it was a kind of licensing issue with the BBC, but that also kind of just took you out of the moment a little bit where, because he was called, was it Richard Thwaite? And it was supposed to be Richard Twat. And it was funny, but you know, there was something about, this isn't Richard and Eddie Hitler, it's Richard Thwaite, and it didn't quite gel in the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, John, what did you make of this time? Because I think it's, you know, being a long-term Alan fan, discovering him in the early 90s, with this time being the kind of most recent high-profile TV. So obviously it's a very different beast to something like Mid-Morning Matters, which we've obviously talked about and we all love. So yeah, what's the John Robbins view on this time with Alan Partridge?
I actually think it rewards a second viewing. And I enjoyed both series more the second time I watched it. I think, like I said, because I can recall most Alan lines, whenever they popped up, you sort of go, oh, why don't you write a new line? But then, like I said, the vast majority of people haven't seen the places from which those lines came. I'll start with, like, these aren't criticisms. These are just things I would have liked to see as a fan. I like that Alan has become more relevant because we're now in a culture war. Mm-hmm. So essentially, like, it's so weird. There was a really interesting article in The Independent about how Accidental Partridge as a concept has sort of given canny, slightly right-wing presenters the license to say quite offensive things because people go, oh, that's so Partridge when Richard Madeley says that thing, as opposed to going, oh, that thing Richard Madeley said is really offensive. So it sort of sugarcoats unpleasant views to liken it to Partridge. And yet this time was sort of that happening in a fictitious realm. I think I would have liked to have seen a more of an arc over the whole series about Alan actually getting quite popular. Because he's actually speaking for the majority now. He's speaking for the Brexit majority. There are several sort of political movements over the last 5 years, which Alan is now in the majority. And I thought it would be quite interesting to maybe, as opposed to in individual moments, track Alan's progress as being the person on this time who the public agree with more than Jenny.
And I think that's kind of the setup that I think the Gibbons brothers explained when they first went to press about this show happening, was that Alan was kind of like now the voice of a nation because he was on the, I guess, the relevant side of a Brexit or a culture debate. So that was
pre-press.
Yes,
but not really in the show. I wanted to feel more that Alan was actually touching a nerve in a way that the rest of the show may not have done. But that's just me in a sort of fantasy world. They didn't actually talk about Brexit at all.
No, which I think in a way is kind of good. It's kind of, it felt like they used the Brexit thing as very much background, some kind of background exposition that was never.
I just think Alan would have a lot to say about Brexit. But not necessarily a lot of different things to say about it, but he might say the same thing again and again. I thought the episode where the previous presenter is outed as someone who's guilty of historic sex crimes was so good.
He will be missed.
Hashtag John Gunn.
Hashtag was
John gone.
I feel like that episode, that feels like a classic in the APU, personally, because I think there is kind of, there is quite a narrative heft because it is about John dying and Alan taking the reins properly. That feels like that's properly now entrenched in a kind of classic Alan canon.
But also, Alan isn't quite as bad as we think he is.
Totally.
He's very close to Tony Blackburn in a sense, in that he's quite a goody two-shoes, Alan. He has not made any major mistakes in the sort of spectrum of broadcasters and entertainers have made mistakes. And there's that great bit where Simon makes a sort of bad joke about Alan at the BBC and he panics and over-explains an event that happened with Pans People where he pulls his pants over his shoulders. But Alan would not get cancelled.
Yeah.
In the same way that Madeley doesn't get cancelled. Because you tend not... Because Alan's also not really a social media beast. He's not done anything to be ashamed of, really. So it was interesting to... I thought that episode was pitched really well. The scene with the Alan lookalike when he starts singing the Irish song, that is so good.
Yeah.
I thought Lynn felt a bit underused.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we'd probably agree, but then also, in a way, that was kind of the genius of it. It left you wanting more.
I know, it just left me thinking Lynn's been underwritten here. Also, I thought the Digiwall failing became quite a predictable sort of moment of each episode. I would have Tim Key on that every single time, but part of me is thinking, in a realistic world, how the hell has he managed to get Sidekick Simon booked for that? But that's just more of a sort of like, I'm applying a little too much reality onto the situation. But I loved the interactions with Simon and Alan. And I love that sort of sense that Alan has maybe somehow wangled him the job and he's letting Alan down. But I mean, that would never happen.
No, just to be clear.
I mean, my small amount of experience of BBC commissioning, you never go, can my mate come on as well?
Yeah, bring him down.
So, all in all, I really liked it, and I will watch it again, probably for a third time. But there were a few moments as a fan that I sort of thought, I thought that... apologies for forgetting her name. The actress who plays Jenny is superb.
Susanna Fielding. Yeah, she's fantastic.
She is so good at that role. She absolutely nails it.
Well, I think where her and Tim Key both were absolutely brilliant is because it's all about how they react to Alan. And a lot of it is about subtlety and facial expressions or just something within the eyes, even to the kind of insanity happening next to them in the studio. I think they both absolutely perfected that, 100%.
And also, there are moments where she could have really like thrown Alan under a bus and she doesn't. It's almost like you can see her keeping a mental sort of tab of Alan's mistakes. She could have got him fired very early doors or made him look a complete fool, but it's that commitment to making the show look good, which, I mean, everyone is familiar with from Good Morning Britain.
Oh, Susanna Reid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where she's
keeping a straight face.
For the good of the show, I'm not going to just completely call you out, but I will challenge you when needed.
And you will occasionally see her roll her eyes, actually, as well, which is always quite entertaining. That is definitely
happened. But she rolls her eyes, but she never totally blocks.
Yeah.
She will never let the sort of the flow of the show completely go.
Yeah, a seasoned professional.
She's broadcasting with a complete idiot.
I mean, look, I think we've talked about this a lot. I think definitely one of the key strengths of this time is repeated viewings. Mm-hmm. I mean, we probably tried to watch it all at least. I don't know. Well, for me, I watched each episode 3 times before we got to recording, and each watch through, I would be spotting new gags. It's very kind of multi-layered, very densely kind of scripted, because there are so many visual gags that you will very easily miss the first time round or even the second time round. So it definitely, definitely a rewarding repeat view for sure, which I think is one of the strengths of, I think the Gibbons writing. There's just there's so much kind of layers in it now because they've been writing with Coogan and developing this character for years and years. But then I think the other interesting thing, which I think you kind of touched on, is about this kind of narrative arc. I feel because it's so packed and it's so dense, I also feel like there were a lot of narrative arcs they almost kind of set up, but then ran out of airtime to actually have any kind of payoff. I think there's a lot of stuff totally. That got left on the cutting room floor. Yeah.
And I think Alan as a voice of the people, and also like the final episode of the second series, when with the network bit.
Yeah.
You're not quite sure whether people are with Alan or not, because they are on the social media to an extent, and then he goes outside and you're not, and they sort of aren't. So it's not quite resolved whether Alan is tapping into this new sort of right wing frustration with the world or whether he's missed the mark. Whereas I think it's more interesting if Alan is actually suddenly the voice of the popular vote.
Mm.
Yeah. He's done that thing of he probably is the voice of the people in, you know, the home counties or whatever, but he's run out into central London expecting there to be some kind yes. of uprising. And again, he's missed the point when actually, yes, there is something in what he's doing and who he's representing, but he's misunderstood how to kind of execute on it, and it falls flat as it usually does.
I think it's kind of conflicting as well, because I still feel like, well, the way they kind of concluded that is he even actually on the right? Because we definitely had a lot of email correspondence, people going, oh yeah, that, you know, they're setting up for he's going to progress to be a kind of Nigel Farage type character. And I don't think it's that, because obviously the key phrase being I'm hopping mad and I want something in the middle. So actually, the character hasn't overtly gone to the left or to the right. So I think it's quite interesting to see where is it going to go? And where are the Gibbons and Steve Coogan going to take the character next?
Well, I actually think Alan is a floating voter to an extent. And I think Alan's politics are very local. So there's that great bit on Knowing Me, Knowing You, the radio show, when the Lib Dem politician comes on. And he reveals that the reason he voted for her is because she got rid of those gypsies. And that's such an astute observation about someone who is broadly conservative, probably a Thatcherite. But if you promise to change something that annoys them about their town, chances are you'll get their vote. And she tries to play down the fact that she got rid of the gypsies. And apologies for using Alan's language. Obviously, I wouldn't use that term to describe that community. But Alan is using a term she doesn't like and is revealing something she did that she probably doesn't want to advertise, but that's what won her the votes.
Yeah.
And I think Alan, I think even if Keir Starmer had a policy that really impacted Alan, he might go. I think Alan's definitely voted Blair, I think. Do you think? Maybe 97.
Yeah, I think that feels about right.
I think Alan gave Blair a chance and then reverted back to Tory.
I like that. That rings true to me.
But I don't think he would be Farage, because I think he's too desperate to get in with people.
Well, that's what I was going
to say. Whereas
Farage
is sort of desperate to go against, whereas I think Alan sort of wants to follow the tide a bit. He wants to be cool and in.
Yeah, and I feel like what you see with his character is he'll happily contradict himself to go with what actually the person he's in the room with thinks, you know. So, and I think that maybe you can extrapolate that to how he would vote and what his political allegiance are. It's like, which way is the wind blowing, you know? Yeah, I think
also he's sort of quite far away from. I was having a chat recently about sort of the new wave of libertarian, very controversial figures in the media, and how they, because they're chasing column inches, like Katie Hopkins, the perfect example, because they're chasing column inches, they have to say more and more and more and more outrageous stuff to the point at which the people they originally appealed to think, fucking hell, what are you on about? That's not even on my wavelength. And I don't think Alan would ever be canny enough to start that process where you think, oh, I've got a bit of a niche here because you can't say anything these days. So I'm going to say you can't say anything these days. And I'm going to keep saying things you, in inverted commas, can't say until the point at which I'm saying stuff that actually you can't say. So people lose interest. I don't think Alan would think, oh, I'm onto something here. I think he would just sort of speak his mind.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with it next, because obviously we know Stratagem that's probably going to be the next thing. I think the way they launched that, you had the kind of video of Coogan in character talking about we're a divided nation and I've got this stratagem to kind of bring us together. So I feel like they're probably going to develop these ideas. So John, we've almost kind of covered everything in the APU and almost chronologically, but there is something we haven't talked about, which is the books or even the audiobooks. As an avid Partridge fan, what do you make of those?
I came to iPartridge just after everyone had told me they'd listened to the audiobook and it was the best thing they'd ever heard in their life. So I actually read it before I listened to the audiobook and I loved it. I think it's so great. And it's so nice having some of those gaps filled in the sort of Alan chronology, especially a lot of the stuff with Carol.
Yeah.
The section about Sally Gunnell is one of the funniest Alan sections. I have to say, with Nomad, I felt I could tell the bits that, it just felt like it every so often went into fan fiction territory as opposed to sort of canon Alan, if I can coin the phrase. Alan-on, which doesn't work because that's an organization to help the families of alcoholics. But there's a line in Nomad where it's talking about him ordering pizzas for Bruno Brooks hid behind a hedge as a prank, and I just thought, that's not Alan. Doesn't do that. Alan's not really a prankster. He is in the moment, but he's not someone who would go to the trouble of doing that. So Nomad has very funny moments, but it felt a bit far-fetched. The Oast House, I thought was fantastic, but it did my head in that they released it all in one.
Yeah.
It's a podcast. Mm. Put it out 20 minutes a week. Make people desperate to hear the next one. Make people appreciate it and savor it, because it's not a podcast. It's an audiobook.
Yes.
Yeah.
So 100%. I mean, it's an audiobook framed as a podcast, but no one releases 4 hours of a podcast at once. Apart from Joe Rogan. I've never listened to it.
He's an idiot.
I hear it's awful.
Drinks that yellow stuff in his
ears. I bet he drinks that yellow stuff. Yeah, exactly.
I bet he... Well, I mean, no, he does drink that absolutely. Yellow stuff in tins. So I thought the Oast House was fantastic, but I just could not... I mean, I know it why, for sort of, you know, contractual reasons, but...
And the money.
To have actually had that as a weekly thing, appointment downloading, if such a phrase has ever been uttered, I'm sure it has somewhere. I just didn't want it all at once. It was too much. I wanted to sort of savor it a bit more. I
thought it should, to that point, I thought that it should have either been a podcast, and as you say, 20 minutes each week and make people desperate for more, or it should have been an audiobook because it came in one, and it should have been more structured so that you could listen to it from beginning to end, and it had more of that kind of arc to it, because I didn't think that listening to it from beginning to end was necessarily hugely rewarding, whereas actually having it as more weekly episodic installments would have been much more kind of palatable, because I don't know, the way that, you know, not a huge amount really happens in the Oast House, and in some respects that's kind of the charm of it, but having it all drop in one go, I think that because we listened to it in one go, we felt that there were areas where they could have maybe been a bit tighter in the edit. Whereas actually, if you're listening to that week on week for 20 minutes, it becomes much more compelling listening, I think. So yeah, we were a bit confused by the sort of the...
Yeah, I mean, Alan with a dictaphone in lockdown, I mean, that writes itself. I mean, it doesn't write itself. It's a process that has taken an awful lot of work from everyone involved, but it's sort of, the pitch is so good.
Yeah.
But I did feel it was a big chunk of Alan all at once.
And I feel like when we kind of did it, I mean, we were obviously super meta, so we were a podcast reviewing a podcast in essence. I think we all kind of agreed as well, it felt like there were too many episodes. I think there were 18. And it felt like if there had been maybe 10 or 12, I think perhaps the whole experience would have been a bit more rewarding, because it would have been a bit more honed in, and maybe they could have even created a bit more of a narrative arc across it. Whereas you had quite disparate kind of thoughts in each episode. Yeah.
Quickly then, in terms of... we've
no need to be quick. I've got nothing else to do.
Okay. Make sure you really develop...
Quite literally, I'm on the ring road.
Okay. Really develop...
Are we going Joe Rogan length for this now?
Yeah, exactly. What do you think then in terms of the different mediums? Because, you know, he's been on the radio. You could argue he's had YouTube shorts. He's had a sitcom. He's had a book. He's had a podcast. Is it a podcast? We're not sure. We'll leave that. Which of the mediums do you think kind of best suits Alan?
I don't think it matters as long as he's trapped. I think the medium, he works in any medium. I would love to hear him presenting an actual 2-hour long radio show. I would guess an offer has been made at some point, surely, for Alan's weekly radio show, but it's a huge amount of writing. It's a big old turnover of stuff. But with the music, like the full length songs. But that's so, it's so much time.
Well,
and inevitably you would, the only way that I think Steve Coogan would be able to record that is all in one chunk. And that's a big old hefty
week of stuff. Did you see the TFI Friday show that he hosted?
What?
Yeah.
Don't you ever mention something that Alan has done that I haven't seen or heard of.
Oh, wow. Have we found some unknown...
What? Not when he's singing with Elton John?
No, he's not Elton
John. Singing with Elton John in it, is he?
Not when he's interviewing Noel Gallagher.
No. So this was TFI... Remember when Channel 4 brought back TFI Friday in, I think, 2015 or 16 for a series?
No, I don't know that.
Well,
strap in.
There was a Christmas special to end that series. So Steve Coogan, in character, basically co-hosted the whole thing. I'm sure it's probably on some kind of website somewhere to dig it out. But applying the character to a real life show was just so good. In the same way, like he's done Jonathan Ross in character probably a few years prior to that. Yeah.
Okay, then, to answer your original question, I think the one arena Alan doesn't suit is live in character with real people. I think every time I've seen him, and I would imagine, I'm guessing Steve Coogan is quite reluctant to do those, and those are probably the most stressful things he ever does. But Alan as Alan with real people, I think must be very difficult, because it sort of has to be scripted. Yeah. Mm. But to make that seem unscripted is an impossible task, really. I mean, can you imagine interviewing David Brent on Jonathan Ross, or interviewing Richard on Jonathan Ross? It's sort of, something about it feels a bit kind of, when's this going to go wrong?
I mean, I think you're right. I think those things are meticulously scripted in the same way that it would be any other piece of the APU. And there was another thing he did in character. I think it was Richard Bacon on Five Live years ago, which a lot of people have kind of been in contact with us about that over the years, saying it's one of the best kind of in-character things that he's done as an interview like that. So that, but again, I think because it was quite short and scripted, it wasn't like a two-hour thing, and it wasn't a hosting thing. So as an interview where obviously I'd imagine they've sat down with Richard Bacon and his team and figured out exactly how it's all going to flow. So there's no room for error or being caught out, I guess.
Well, I think, I mean, the temptation is to think that surely he must be able to improvise as Alan now. And I think he probably could, but the stakes are too high.
Exactly, yeah.
Because everything... Steve Coogan said this really, really wise thing about his time in Hollywood. He said, doesn't matter if the films are bad or badly reviewed, as long as your bit is great, that's sort of your sort of Hollywood collateral, your Hollywood stock price goes up. And I think that's something Steve Coogan's always done, regardless of the project. He's always come out of it very well. And I think it would be too risky to do live Alan improvised, because Alan cannot fail. I don't mean Alan,
yeah,
even though that's part of Alan's personality, but no Alan project has ever failed. You know, we're nitpicking in such minute ways as massive fans, but nothing he's ever done has been bad.
No.
Which, you know, to go back to our previous comedic comparison, other creators of big characters have done some really bad stuff. But Coogan's never done anything with Alan that's really bad, or even bad, or even average. Everything he's done has been good, which... Over a 35 year career is insane.
Yeah. You know what? It's literally...
That's insane.
It's literally 30 years. I get, yeah. If On the Hour was 1991, so it's literally 30 years of the character existing.
He's never dropped the ball with Alan. So the tension and the prep before every project must be immense for everyone involved.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've talked obviously a lot about the kind of comedy that you kind of grew up loving and the kind of sitcoms that have been quite inspirational from Alan to Bottom, what have you. Is there anything that you've discovered during recent lockdowns that you've got into, or is there anything that's new or recent that you've been watching that you've been loving?
So usually I'm a very bad person to ask this question to, because... And I know this is a sort of failing. I will watch Bottom for the 29th time rather than watch the new thing. So I've never seen Parks and Rec. This is depressing and people will hate me. I've never seen Orange is the New Black. I've never seen XYZ. However, I mean, I have seen the US Office 4 times all the way through. And that's 9 seasons. And
that's
a lot of television. I think it's a masterpiece. I've recently, though, watched a few new things because my fiance is much more sort of up to date with stuff. So I watched Schmigadoon. Have you seen that?
I haven't heard of that. No, I don't know what that is.
So Schmigadoon is on Apple TV, and it's sort of basically the premise is a couple go on a hike to save their relationship, and they accidentally walk into a world which is all musicals. And everyone in there is in a musical. And they can only get out if they find true love. So that's really good. I watched Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun.
I love that. I thought that was great. I mean, insane.
I really like it. I think... One problem, and it's not a problem with the writing, is that because it's all there at once, if you binge it, it sort of gets on your nerves in a way that it wouldn't if it was every week.
Oh, that's very true. I think I watched the whole thing over like 2 days, and I think the other Tom that does his podcast, I think he watched it all in one morning, because they're all quite short episodes.
And it's there's some occasions, like we're saying with The Oast House, is where actually... we're not designed to watch an entire series in a day, because you get so in tune with the sort of the language of the show that you almost start to spot stuff. Whereas if you'd had to wait a week for the next episode, you wouldn't. Another thing I've watched that I really like is I Think You Should Leave. That's really, really good American sketch show. There's America and Australia are really doing well with sketch shows at the minute. Another thing I really liked was, well, Alistair Green in lockdown has been just such a revelation, just his videos on Instagram. And I know him. I mean, I remember him as Al Stick when he used to stand up. But his videos are so great.
And of course, he had a bit part in the end of This Time. He was the man in window. He was somebody who was also hopping mad, which I thought was quite a coup.
I think I missed that.
Oh, yeah. John.
How did I miss? I'd have texted him to say how jealous I was if I'd known.
You still can.
It's weird when you see your mates in Partridge. It's very weird.
Now, if you watch it now, knowing it's him, I think you go, oh, of course that's him. But it's from such a distance. It's literally a head in a window. But yeah, I think he is billed as man in window. So yeah. But yeah, I'd agree. His stuff has been brilliant over the last year or so.
I mean, if you think the glory years of Alan, if you want to call it the golden age up until sort of I, Man and Partridge season two, I hadn't even started doing comedy then. So to see your contemporaries, so Lolly and Tash Dimitru and Alistair Green and Jamie Dimitru and Tim Key and Liam Williams, and you're just sort of thinking, you're genuinely thinking, how can I... You know that bit when Dave Clifton's gone to do archery with
Tony Hadley.
Tony Hadley. What? How can I?
I could.
Rubbish. but I mean, so happy for them all. But sort of, it is very strange to think I'm sort of one degrees of Alan Partridge away. Sorry, what was the question?
Oh, no,
you got any more wine, Rosie?
Did you have a drink this morning?
The stuff I've been watching.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's already quite a decent list. So,
Cool. Well, I would highly recommend Schmigadoon. If you like musicals, you'll absolutely love it. You Should Probably Leave, or I Should Probably Leave, or whatever it's called, is really good. And Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun, I would watch in sort of small doses.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's so kind of, it's such an assault on the senses, that show. It definitely benefits being spaced out, I think. Watching comedy aside, do you want to tell us a bit about your various kind of podcast projects and everything else that people can find you doing at the moment?
Sure. So to discuss finally some of those irons that are in various fires, the Five Live show continues at pace, and
I have to interject about the Five Live show. I love that you end up literally having a feature called "What's the Best Thing."
What's the best thing? That was actually Dave's idea.
Was that deliberate though? Did he know what he was doing with that?
I don't think he did. I don't think he's got quite as big a knowledge of Mid Morning Matters as we have. In fact, he probably hasn't seen it. But yeah, he basically, and me and Ellis on this Zoom call with him were like, Are you genuinely suggesting what's the best thing? We all know the phrase.
Do you think that's the most real-life Partridge thing you've ever done on air? What's the best thing? It's got to be up there, surely.
There's so many.
It just feels like any kind of phone-in topic has the potential to sound like a Partridge phone-in topic, right? Just because of the nature of...
Yeah, I mean, some of our phone-in topics are very Partridge. Last week we did "What Have You Had for Ages?"
Hey, wasn't that one of your most successful phone-ins to date as well?
It really was.
There we go.
Yeah, alongside "Is a Cadbury's Cream Egg the Ideal Size and Weight for Throwing?" So in lockdown, well, they were meant to be live gigs, but they became sort of Zoom podcasts. But The Moon Underwater is a podcast about where we have guests creating their favourite pub. And we are also doing some live shows of those at the George the Fourth pub in Chiswick now that lockdown, fingers crossed, has relaxed for a bit. Do a podcast called Queen Pod, where we listen to every single Queen song in chronological order. Well, album order, we do a side at a time. Ellis and I are currently planning our third series of How Do You Cope, which is a podcast where we talk to prominent people about mental health struggles and obstacles they've overcome, how they have coped with various things in their lives.
Are you back on the Bad Golf YouTube?
Oh, yeah, Bad Golf, where I and Alex Horn, the Taskmaster's assistant, play golf badly on a bi-weekly basis, even though I'm getting quite good at golf now because I've had an awful lot of time on my hands during lockdown. But we come up with a system to allow us to keep it pretty even though I'm going to say superb at golf now.
Just rebrand it, Superb Golf.
Superb Golf plus Alex Hall.
Yeah, that works. Yeah.
I've got North Norfolk Knights. I'm doing Skirmish, a military-based quiz show for UK digital channel Conquest, which has a highest audience share for any digital TV show in the Norfolk area. And I think that's probably it. I write a monthly column for Today's Golfer. That's just a sentence I never thought I'd say, but I love it. I love reading about golf. I love playing golf. Oh, there's going to be something really important I've missed. But anyway, no one's going to listen to any of that stuff. They want to hear about Alan.
It's a lot of irons in the fire. I think there's
going on. I submit unsolicited scripts to Baby Cow. So you never know.
Maybe
you'll be slagging off my decisions.
And have you ever met Neil or Rob Gibbons at all?
No, I've interacted with a couple of Gibbons a couple of times via app messages on Twitter, but I'm pretty sure they don't really know who I am, and nor should they. I could just be an Alan fan. I don't know. There was something. There was some conversation about Alan doing a tour of motorway services that I got added into, or someone said I should do, or something. I can't remember. They're just at conversations lost to the mists of time.
Well, shall we end with a colossal question for you, John? So get ready. Okay, can only be one. Is it Alan or is it Queen?
But that's quite a strange question, because
I'm just reading what's on the screen. John, just reading what's on the screen.
But can I only listen to Alan or Queen, or can I only watch Alan or Queen?
I think this is almost a Desert Island Disc type thing. Only one can exist. What would it be?
Oh, well, obviously if I could only take one to a desert island, it would be Alan, because I know both of them all. So I could play them both in my head. I think I could probably more accurately play Queen in my head than I could play Alan in all his formats. So, for example, Oasthaus. I've listened to it once. So I think there would perhaps be more new things to find in Alan than in Queen, whereas I could just play Queen in my head from start to finish 73 to 91 go. I mean, I could just do it now. So I would take Alan rather than Queen.
It's a victory for Alan, but to be fair, I think you found a way around the Desert Island system that we've just applied there. So, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm tempted not to pick Queen on if I were to ever grace the hallowed halls of Desert Island Discs. That would be a good scripted Alan, actually. Alan on Desert Island Discs.
Yes. Oh, well, he did. Have you heard his Inheritance Tracks, which is a similar kind of format? Have I done it again?
Don't you ever, 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 ever.
I will email you some links.
Great.
Yeah,
that would be great.
It's basically a Desert Island Disc type idea, but the songs he picks are ridiculous. Yeah.
I think Alan would work on Desert Island Discs because there's so few questions. So it's one question, then you talk for 4 minutes. I think you could script that quite well. I'd like to see Alan on DID. He'd call it DID as well.
Yes.
Do we think...
Delta in India Delta.
I'm wondering, actually, because there's references that we haven't touched on, but there is references to Queen in Alan yes. Partridge, which we haven't talked about.
I know everyone.
And I'm wondering, like, do we think... I mean, does Alan like the music of Queen?
He does, but he doesn't like... I don't think he really likes Freddie's behaviour, but he does like the songs.
Yeah.
I don't think he would get on with May either.
Do you think May's...
I think he would be sort of anti some of May's... Anti-Badger. Yeah. I think Alan is probably pro-Badger Culls.
He's Countryside Alliance, isn't he? And...
He is, but I think the interesting thing about Alan is that he does no country activities which would justify him agreeing with the Countryside Alliance. He just likes having a big urban house in the country. So he sort of thinks of himself as being a country gent, walking as close to Mike Oldfield's estate as he's allowed. But he doesn't actually do anything that people who are in the Countryside Alliance do. Like, he wouldn't know what to do with a horse or a farm or a wood.
He rambles. But that's as good as it gets. He rambles.
Yeah, he likes to wear the gear and walk and align himself with their politics.
Big fat socks.
I think he'd probably get on with Roger the best out of Queen. I think him and Roger might get along a bit because Roger's a bit of a sort of a playboy. I think Alan would be attracted to that lifestyle. But yeah, there's when he walks into the Travel Tavern singing Killer Queen, when he mock makes love to someone and... No, it's Michael makes love to someone from behind and Alan says it could be Brian May. Then there's the recent episode of this time where they're trying to name as many Queen songs as they can.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Which I got a lot of app messages about on Twitter.
And I think some of our listeners did point out that technically, script-wise, they didn't complete the challenge because one of them was just saying Queen, wasn't it? So they didn't actually... I can't remember how many they had to get, but technically they didn't do it. So, yeah. Ruin that bit of script. Interesting. Yeah. Or maybe that's a joke. Is there any more Queen in Alan? Nick, you got anything?
Oh, I think you've listed all of them. But yeah, there is one, there's a reference, and I can't remember which episode it is, you'll probably know, but there is one where he makes reference to Freddie Mercury and, as you say, kind of his behaviour. But is that in Mid-Morning Matters? I can't remember which one it is, but there's definitely some reference to Freddie Mercury.
Well, there's when Michael is... He says, God rest his soul. He says, that was the other one.
Yes,
God rest his soul.
Yeah, that's the one.
I think that's in the same May love-making long hair riff. But I'm sure there are other Queen references in Alan Partridge that I cannot call to mind. I don't think he ever plays Queen on the radio, which you would think he would play a bit of Queen.
I can't think of it. Yeah, you're right. It feels like it's definitely music that he would play on his radio shows. And the names of... Is it not a Radio Gaga? Maybe not. The titles of Queen tracks also feel like they're set up quite nicely for jokes as well. Or is there something about Fat Bottom Girls? There's one about Fat Bottom Girls, isn't there? Because he talks about how... I can't think the... He goes into quite a technical answer about why women have sometimes slightly larger... bums.
Yeah, about the way that they distribute fat, whereas men distribute it around the stomach and women on the hips and bum. But doesn't he... So he talks... That bit is he's explaining to Brian May in his anecdote. I think he's met Brian May and he explains that to May. Am I right? Because there's a bit in Poptastic, the Tony Blackburn book, where he approaches Brian May at a do and says, Brian, I know people like Bohemian Rhapsody, but I've never listened to the whole thing through. I put it on when I go to the toilet.
Oh, God.
Which is such a sort of rude thing to say to someone. Have you read Poptastic?
I've heard you do the excerpts on the XFM show. And I think I was trying to find a copy and I literally couldn't track one down. But we did talk about it very briefly on one of our episodes about how it basically is. It's the blueprint for I, Partridge, 100%.
It's well worth a read. The problem was, as soon as we started talking about it quite regularly, you used to be able to get it secondhand on Amazon for like 59p plus postage. It's now like 60 quid just because the algorithms of Amazon... A lot of people,
Supply and demand, isn't it?
It only takes 10 people to want to buy it and suddenly the price shoots up. But if you can get hold of a copy, I commend you to reading Poptastic. It's a superb piece of work, but also an incredible account of a man who played a huge part in inventing modern radio.
Yeah.
But did once best Noel Edmonds when a waitress came up and Noel thought she was about to ask him an autograph, whereas actually Tony had sold her a dehumidifier on QVC.
Oh,
needless so to good. Say, Tony had the last laugh.
There are two key bits of Queen in the world of the APU that we haven't referenced. John, I think you're going to kick yourself. Yeah, I'll give you a sec, because particularly one of these, I can't believe we didn't think of it.
Could you give me a clue?
Yes. Okay. One is from this time. One is from a live show. Remember, John, dead air is a crime. Can't believe I got to say that to somebody who DJs on Five Live. Unbelievable.
I'm going to have to pass. From a live show, is it Alan Partridge and other less successful characters?
Yes. And again, this is only because I've looked it up on the internet. I'd forgotten all about this, even though we did go to that show. Nick, any thoughts?
I think I've only seen that twice.
Yeah, I've not seen that in a long time.
Okay, so much like Alan did a Kate Bush medley, he did a Queen medley on that tour, which I'd totally forgotten existed. And the other thing that we forgot, and I think we're all going to kick ourselves... You have the CPR section with Another One Bites the Dust.
Oh, yes, Another One Bites the Dust, Yep. They're necking.
Which we all really, really loved. Definitely we're big fans of that when we discussed it on the podcast. And I think that concludes Queen in the APU. It's a new regular feature.
The problem with using Another One Bites the Dust for CPR is the bass line doesn't go throughout the whole song. Because you can't go... Dun, 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 dun. You can't pause.
Yeah, that's not going to help.
That's why staying alive is so much better.
Yep. Okay, well, if we think of anything else where Queen features in the APU, John, we'll drop you a message. But better still, other people will get in touch with us and say, I can't believe you forgot about X-Men.
Oh,
here we go.
Well, Freddie Mercury features in The Day to Day. When Chris Morris leads up to one of those clips, and I think it's a politician. It's not too late for Freddie Mercury. I think if she contacted her local MP or local council or something.
God, it's been years since I watched it. I haven't rewatched that.
Chris Morris says something like, Chris Patton says it's not too late for Freddie Mercury. Well, I think if she contacted her local council, she,
Oh, excellent. Okay, well, look, I think that's probably a good point to wrap this up. I reckon we're not going to get any better than the meeting of those worlds, Queen and the APU. So, John, thank you so much for joining us. You've been exceedingly generous with your time. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have.
I have had an absolute blast. It's so nice to just be in Alan's world. And I have to say, it's not just like my comedy and my radio work. It's actually my life. Like Alan's attention to detail and his ability to find interest in the most banal things makes even a motorway drive so fascinating. And I often think of the bit where he's talking about the owls and the owl sanctuary. He says it's just minimum maintenance grass. But if you can find those details in life, it does actually make life interesting, even if your fiance thinks you've gone mad. When you're saying, look, they've only got How do they expect us to switch to electric cars and then we've got two charging points in a in a service station car park that's probably housing 600 cars? And she goes, what are you talking about? But you're sort of trying to make the world around you a little bit more interesting.
Like I say, there's definitely Alan in all of us, whether we mean to do it or not, I think is where life is at these days. John, if people want to keep up to date with you, what is the best way to do that? Is it a follow on Twitter? What are the details?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I am on Twitter and I do tell people about things on Twitter. I don't engage in conversations on Twitter. Not that, you know, I mean, if people are being nice, if people ask me a question, I will reply. But I don't sort of don't go on there for my hot takes on every single thing that happens, because I just think that way madness lies. I'm on Twitter at Nomadic Reverie. I'm on Instagram at Nomadic_Reverie. And you can, the best thing you could do would be go to my website, johnrobbins.com, and subscribe to my newsletter, where I give very sporadic updates about my thoughts and feelings.
There we go. I think that wraps us up. Thank you so much, John. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
See you later.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle. Aha!
Yup, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey tennis?
Little pierce my foot on a spike.
With a chuckle.
No.
Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Okay.
Monkey tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzup of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Back of the net.
Monkey tennis?
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.